Hey folks, how are you doing? It's now what feels like week 2000 of quarantine. I don't know, something like that. Double digits, triple digits, quadruples. Numbers are abstractions at this point, though I guess they've always been abstractions. Regardless, many of us have gone through various stages of grief, just reckoning with all of the difficult things that are going on in this country. And that grief and anxiety have both manifested in a variety of ways, from people making their own sourdough starters and giving them identities and names and thinking about their little sourdough families, the little kid bread loaves that are going to go to Ivy League universities and lead great lives, to activities like writing the next great screenplay, novel, short story compilation that's somehow about intergenerational trauma and existentialism and rotting oranges, but you know, we're thinking about doing all these things while spending 8 minutes every morning whisking Dalgona coffee. Regardless of your take on all of this, whether it be too specific, too niche, I think the point is just that these days it's important to find something low stakes to care about because everything is incredibly high stakes. I remember going on YouTube and watching the Vlogbrothers talk about marble racing and how that's kind of become the stand-in for competitive sports in our COVID times. Because people just want something to root for. They want something to tie their ambitions and their hopes and their destinies to. But that being said, jokes aside, very grateful to have a roof over my head, a stable job, and somehow still have the mental and emotional energy to continue pursuing recreational production of linguistic content. Woohoo! Regardless, we're here today to talk about the vocabulary that's rapidly sprung up around quarantine and COVID-19 life. Am I talking about fiery Tom Nook Animal Crossing meme references? No, I wish, not exactly. Something a little bit more serious this time. But before all of that, obligatory intro, I guess, I'm Jenny Lee. This is Articulate, the podcast about language and all of the weird idiosyncrasies and contortionist strangeness that it exhibits, especially in extraordinary periods of time that we're going through. And thanks so much for joining me today to listen to language and all of its contortions and strangeness. Seriously, guys, thank you. It's been a minute. Cool. So let's mosey on over to our first topic, namely what I like to think of as the new lexicon of COVID that's largely driven by the fact that COVID is a synchronized, oddly universal experience. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that prior to COVID, we were kind of all doing our own thing, right? Like some of us would wake up in the morning, maybe make a little avocado toast, put some chili flakes on it, you do you, jam your jam, marmalade your marmalade. And others of us would wake up, run 6 miles, be super extraordinary people. But, you know, now that we're living in a world of COVID, we kind of share this collective destiny. In other words, our individual destinies are now all bundled up into one shared path. And that path is COVID and how our societies respond to COVID. It has this shared implication that crosses the individual boundary and encompasses all of us. So examples, a couple of examples hiding under that bush over there or in that tree that has lovely orange flowers and a small raccoon nesting next to it. Do you like this imagery that I'm creating? Okay, so some examples of this. You know, in our extraordinary circumstances, we see ubiquitous usage of a couple of different terms. Words like self-quarantine, social distancing, and flattening the curve. And the function that these terms provide is that they capture, again, this harmonization of experience that we're all going through in tandem. Everything's in tandem. All of our lives are stacked on top of each other in this beautifully, terrifically unified timeline. For the first time in decades, centuries even, we're all experiencing the same psychological landscape. Dread, anxiety, pick your poison. So many different colors and flavors. And because of this synchronization, we need a uniquely specialized vocabulary to capture the sharedness of that experience. These things all mean the same to us because we're all living through a unified moment, and we have the technological capability to communicate the fact that, yes, we are all feeling these things, and we all are experiencing these things. So we need the language that adequately proves slash confirms and reconfirms our experiences. Okay, so that was a lot of mumbo jumbo, and I think there were at least a couple pieces of circular logic in there, or at least oval shaped logic, so I hope you like your round shapes. Regardless, you know, what does this mean, right? What's the relevance of all of this? What is this trying to tell us? Well, first off, because we're all having this synchronized set of experiences, that means that language itself needs to flex and modulate to accommodate the new lived experiences we're all having. I think a lot about The Plague by Camus, which just talked about with some friends today in a book club, and The Plague deals a lot with this idea that language is this infinitely varied, personalized, specialized thing that we employ in so many different contexts. But when we live through a synchronized global health moment like this, language needs to become universal. We need to be able to communicate the same concepts to each other because we're all experiencing the same things. And language is a tool that has to accommodate that and facilitate that. So outside of this vocabulary synchronization effect, something else that's interesting to point out is that quarantining has also shifted the resonances of words, moving their layers around so that the immediate recall brings a different image to mind. So, you know, if language was this amazing 60-layer chocolate cake, all the different layers are moving around right now and we're totally discombobulated because the new orientation is just completely different. But hopefully the cake is still equally delicious and just the same. Examples of this. The word face mask, I think, is the textbook example. So in 2019, face masks used to conjure images of Innisfree and Jeju green pulp, amoeba, anti-aging, miracle liquid, yeast, whatever magic they add to their formula probably has some kind of like magically formulated vampire blood that makes you look 25 for the rest of your life. But now, when we say the word face mask, it's all about personal protective equipment. I had this experience last week when I was trying to buy some beauty face masks online, and I just typed in face mask, and bam! You know, all cloth face masks. And it was super weird because suddenly the resonance, the linguistic meaning of face mask had shifted to accommodate the medical moment. And instead, we'd have to look up things like sheet mask or beauty mask to bring up all of those amazing Korean beauty treasures. In other words, because I'm a fan of repetition and like to hear things over and over, like if repetition had a concert at Barclays Center, I would buy out every single seat and all the places in the pit, and I'd bring grilled cheese sandwiches and eat them all myself because I'd be the only person in the stadium attending the concert for repetition. Repetition. In other words, you know, we're experiencing this unprecedented shift in the strata of language and seeing new terms arise. And this is happening so rapidly that the Oxford English Dictionary has actually broken its typical quarterly update cycle to include COVID-19 and associated terms, given the exponential rise in usage. Like, this major institution of language has shifted away from its production cycle to be like, guys, vocabulary is shifting, and it's shifting really rapidly, and this is a crazy language moment we're all going through. So, moseying. Let's continue to mosey on to our second idea. The fact that it's not just the fact that our lexicons have shifted. We've made our decisions with very strong sociological implications in mind. The New Yorker, for example, has a really beautiful piece that talks about the phrase flatten the curve. I'm going to go ahead and read a portion of it because they will phrase it a lot more poignantly than I ever could, slash could even aspire to, slash conceive of. It's just so many eons above what I could ever do. Regardless, the portion reads, "Flatten the curve is a night-blooming locution that seemed to appear in everyone's mental backyard at the same time. There it was, right when we needed it, a phrase to recast the stakes of the pandemic. And then later, flatten the curve caused a paradigm shift for me. It taught me in three words to stop thinking of myself as a potential victim of COVID-19 and to start thinking of myself as a vector for contagion. It alchemizes fear into action. The phrase is an injunction. It says urgently and gently that it is not too late for us to change the shape of the story. I think this New Yorker piece touches on a lot of the reasons why I love language. Namely, the fact that the words that we use really matter. They frame and contextualize our choices, they conjure ethical ramifications, and they really allow us to conceive of that which is inconceivable. Namely, in this case, the inconceivable scale of disaster that we could cause, and the personal responsibility that we all carry every single day. This is particularly important in Western society, which prizes, above all, expressions of individuality. In other words, what Flatten the Curve does is it answers this question of how do we craft a language, or how do we craft terminology that motivates a more community-centric mindset, that insists that we discard our stubborn adherence to individuality? How can we create terminology or phrasing that allows us to give shape to something, to really understand the magnitude of disaster, the scale of catastrophe, in the ways in which our minds commonly can't conceive of? Another example of COVID-19 terminology that's undergone some sociological soul-searching recently, much like myself, experiencing an existential crisis daily, so much so that I can't even say the words existential crisis without stuttering and thinking about my life. But anyways, this term is social distancing. And the World Health Organization has actually in the past issued a recommendation that we recast the term and instead use the phrase physical distancing, which better highlights the idea that even though we're physically apart, we should strive to continue to find ways for connection. And though I personally disagree with this decision, I think it conjures a really interesting point that the subtle psychological shades and undertones of the phrases and words that we use have very real physical and psychological implications when it comes to decision making, and that we constantly have to sift around in these files and portfolios of meaning to arrive at that moment of reckoning. And the decisions that we make are ultimately shaped by the undertones and nuances of the terminology we employ. In other words, language really matters. It really matters because it causes us to think about different things and to prioritize different things. And that's why language is important. So, where does that leave us? You know, where does moseying to two different points leave us ultimately in this long linguistic breakdown of COVID-19 language? Besides with long, sarcastic lists of ways to sign off and on in emails, oh my gosh, dear so-and-so, in these extraordinary pandemic times, hope you are staying well and safe. I really am done with unprecedented times. Please, please give me precedented times. Oh my gosh. Well, for one, I think it tells us that more than ever, we should be careful and especially gentle with language. This is an instance where more than ever, the language that we employ matters because it helps us conceive of our abstract global audience, the recipients of the after effects of all of the decisions we make every single day. This is a moment in which language is helping us navigate through our own emotional swamps with the eventual goal of distilling how we actually feel. Should we be angry? Should we be afraid? Should we be hopeful? A great example of all of this is the call for action from linguists to shift the language that we currently use when we talk about the pandemic. Namely, we tend to clothe the situation in really militaristic language. We're fighting a war against the pandemic! But the question remains, is this actually beneficial? Or does such aggressive language actually exacerbate feelings of anxiety and spur prejudiced behavior against those that we deem guilty and responsible for the behavior? this is precisely why linguists have started a shared resource on possible ways across cultures of communicating the severity of COVID-19. Strongly recommend you guys check out the list. I'll try to link it in the description section of this episode, but there's some really novel ways that folks have tried to navigate and explore this question. So, in moments like this, in this crazy, crazy moment we're living in that goes so much further beyond collecting plants or baking sourdough bread or starting a small quail farm, which is what I've done at home, much to the chagrin and joy of my parents, they are conflicted people, I'm reminded a lot of my classes in college on medieval poetry that I loved so deeply. I was drawn to the concept that in the Middle Ages, poetry had true pragmatic weight that affected the day-to-day. Poetry conveyed abstract notions of divinity. Poetry performed the work of conversion. I can't but help but feel like quarantine language is rotating around a similar axis of purpose. Right? It's helping us convert to a mentality that is community-centric. Super difficult task of conversion. It's spurring a recognition that right now, all we need to do is honestly stay the fuck home, guys. Just stay home. Be a superhero. Be bored. Please, please, please be responsible. All right, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed this. Hope you have an amazing, amazing time contemplating how the linguistic density of the language we use on a daily basis has shifted to reflect our crazy circumstances. And it was so, so good to be able to speak to you all again today.